just been the start of a dynasty. This is history being written. The greatest moment I've seen in Premier League football.
Hey, welcome back to Across the Pond, an English Premier League podcast hosted by four Americans. Tonight, we've got three following Boxing Day. Jacob, Shay, and Chris here, thousands of miles away from each other. I'm about 1,000 miles west. So how's everybody doing over there?
We're doing good, Chris. Much like the table has shaken places and people have played musical chairs in the standings, so have we. Shay is sitting in your normal seat over in the Washington, D.C. ATP studio, and he looks very pleased with himself. He thinks he should be driving the show. He's trying to usurp you.
Is that seat warm, Shay?
I said it's pretty comfy over here. No wonder you're always in a relaxed mood during the show.
That's right. Well, you should be in a relaxed mood after, Andy Serkis is taking reign and freeing Pogba, but we'll get into that. But I think first, guys, we got to talk title race. First up, we had a whole packed day of Boxing Day fixtures, plus today's Southampton-West Ham match. But we know Man City lost. We know Liverpool is now 6 points clear, Tottenham in second, and Manchester City in third. But there's a lot of people talking about the title race. Not a lot of people believe Liverpool can do it. Jacob, you and I think we're both pretty a little negative. I was a little bit on the fence. Shay is pro-Liverpool. What do we make of this title race?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like you said, Chris, I'm very pro-Liverpool in this title race because I think that their performance, right, has shown all the signs of title contenders. And their defense is spectacular. There's offense, even though individual players are struggling, they're still playing well as a unit. And Man City has now, lost three of their last four. So, you just kind of hope those guys would kind of beat each other up, and then Liverpool can coast their way to the trophy.
I mean, that's very much what I guess I am hoping for. My concern with both Liverpool and City is that both those teams appear to be wholly reliant on one or two players more than everybody else. Liverpool, both with Salah and Van Dijk, and Man City, I think, with Aguero and Fernandinho. They've been missing Fernandinho, and we've seen what the results have been. And this goes back to this debate we've been having, Shay and Chris, for a number of weeks now with Arsenal fans over the depth of that Tottenham squad. But, I'm a real believer in the sleeping potential of this Tottenham squad, given that they are just spreading the goals around so well. They do not seem to be wholly reliant on just Harry Kane like years past.
I will say one thing about that Tottenham team is really their only losses this year were to, top four teams other than that Watford loss back in September. They lost to Liverpool, they lost to Man City, and they lost to Arsenal in the North London Derby coming off of five straight wins. I agree the depth is a contributing factor.
Impressive depth.
But I will say, I guess to counter your point about the reliance on a few stars, you look at any title-winning team over the last 20 years, stars will emerge. Cristiano Ronaldo's impact in those Manchester United teams, Drogba's impact, Lampard's impact on those Chelsea teams. You can point at any title-winning team and really point out key characters. I agree, though, that Liverpool, without Salah and or Van Dijk, is a scary situation for a Liverpool fan. But I don't necessarily think that it's one that I don't think it's as likely as you're painting it to be. It's my biggest fear, but I don't think it's inevitable that something's going to happen to one of them, like either lose form and or get injured.
I think you make a good point there, Chris. I just want to look at something that I was researching today. Of the top four teams, I looked at how many goal scorers they have that have over two goals. And Spurs in all of 2017-18 only had four players, and this year already they have six players. So they're really spreading the goals around. And I look at the emergence of Song, how valuable he's been since he's come back from the Asia Cup. Some of his finishes, he is so hot right now. He is like Hansel. He's Zoolander hot. And I think if we're talking about who we're putting on the swagometer.
I'm glad you've come around.
I haven't come around. But he's got to be off the charts given his play right now. And that, really is encouraging signs for me. And then I also look at, what locking down Alderweireld for the rest of the season and eliminating that distraction.
Yeah.
Could potentially provide them. And I'm very fearful if I'm a Liverpool fan. Listen, it's still only halfway through, right? I think there are 57 points left up for grabs. I can't write off Man City or Tottenham. But certainly, I think Tottenham are very worthy challengers, and they need to be taken as such. And I'm afraid people are probably underestimating them, given that they've never won anything before. But in that same vein, neither has his Liverpool squad. So just got to keep that in mind.
Shay, what do you make
of it?
Except for James Milner. Right. Shay, I mean, what do you make of all of this? You know, you seem to be high on Liverpool yourself, but I guess any merit behind this Tottenham title race talk?
I mean, I think Tottenham scoring 8 goals in their last 2 games is very incredible. I think that their form of recent has been strong with Harry Kane. You know, the same thing I mentioned about Liverpool is when your stars don't perform to the best ability, but your team is still playing so well, it shows good aspiration for what you can achieve, meaning that, like, if Harry Kane was to turn it on like we know he can, then Tottenham would be flying that much higher. You know, similar to what I was saying about Arsenal earlier in the season is that the problem with Tottenham and Man City and Arsenal United, whoever's challenging with Liverpool for a title race, is that everybody else has been so good this season. They're beating up each other, and it leaves space. If Liverpool gets through these next 2 rounds of games with Arsenal this weekend and Man City the following one, then they can kind of sit back and watch Tottenham challenge against Chelsea and vice versa. Man City challenge against Chelsea and vice versa with the style of play we're seeing.
I'm not following.
Yeah,
you're lying. I guess I just am asking, like, is Tottenham capable of? You don't think Tottenham's better than the rest of the pack? Is that what you're saying?
No, I don't think Tottenham. I mean, that's why I was confused by you asking the question, because I don't think Tottenham's going to win the trophy. I think they look really good. I think, you know, I think they're a top 3 team, no question. But I don't think Tottenham's going to challenge for the trophy. Tottenham's only lost 1 game in the last 15. They did, like Jacob said, they signed Alderweireld for the rest of the season. So we know defensively they got their stars there. Harry Kane's not playing that well, and they're still scoring a ton of goals. But I just don't see it, because I don't see Liverpool dropping that many points. Now, we have to get through these next 2 games. And if they do get through those next 2 games with a loss to either of those teams, then it throws the race back in discussion, especially with how high Tottenham's flying right now.
I mean, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I think Liverpool could lose both to Arsenal and Man City, just based on the depth we've seen, just based on, honestly, the level of competition we've seen Liverpool play over the last, you know, no offense, playing Man U, but over their last 5, you know, they really haven't played any strong opponent. That Manchester United team wasn't out to fight. And the trouble Arsenal gave Liverpool in their first matchup, I think, you know, it could be 3-3 game, even though Liverpool has only conceded 7 this season.
Emre is going to have to play some of the same tactics and maybe the exact same lineup against Liverpool, and I don't know if that's possible in such short order. But you'd have to imagine after Lichtensteiner's performance at the weekend that that's an area of vulnerability, continued vulnerability in that Arsenal defense, how much they're missing holding. And like I continue to say, there's vulnerability there, and they're there for the taking. I think we'll get through Arsenal just fine. I think the City game will be much better of a test. But the one thing Liverpool are going to need in abundance is luck to win this title. If you look at that worldie that Townsend scored against City, I mean, that could easily happen to Liverpool. That could easily happen to Liverpool in any of their matches, go down a goal early to something spectacular and struggle to fight back. So they're going to need some of that. My biggest concern with City, and why I really do kind of am starting to believe more in a 2-horse between Liverpool and Arsenal, is that this City team has not been in a position. Between Tottenham and Liverpool, is this City team has not been in a position where they've had to fight back and overclaw this type of deficit. We saw them drop 9 points in December of 2016-2017. So, you know, we've seen them drop points before. Of course, they were so strong last year, but around this time of year is when they lost to Palace and then to Liverpool. So they've had these bumps before, but I'm just not so sure that this gap is what they'll be able to overcome. And two, that the personnel are used to coming down from behind and maybe have that grit. They may just be too mentally and physically exhausted playing for Pep for back-to-back seasons like this intensity.
And just to be clear, sorry, just hot take aside, because I know I'm probably going to get some grief for this when people listen to the podcast. I'm not saying that Liverpool is that much better where they can coast to the end of the season winning the trophy, because we don't know what's going to happen. Someone could get hurt. Someone may play bad, you know, whatever. With circumstances that we don't know. Right. But what I'm saying is that there's too much competition in the table this season that I've seen that I have not seen in other seasons to really believe the City can go on a long run without losing games. Likewise for Tottenham, and I guess likewise for Liverpool too. And that's why I think if there's a gap now, you know, with the uncertainty of Arsenal's defense, with the uncertainty of City being able to score goals, I think if there's a gap now, it's going to continue in that trend. That's why.
I would say that's the opposite of hot take, Shay. I think you're being a little, you're talking about me not being bold or hot takes in general. You're being a little wishy-washy here and non-committal.
Well, that's what you got to do when your team is not in the top four anymore.
You can't make
any hot takes and say United's going to win the trophy because you know it's not going to happen. So.
Well, we know that, but interesting. Okay, guys, well, let's talk briefly about this Arsenal team. You know, they drew to Brighton on Boxing Day. They beat, you know, arguably the worst team in the league, Burnley. Just before both of those, they lost to Southampton. So, I mean, three results that, you know, I really wanted to see Arsenal prove worthy and win. And they're coming out with 4 points, and they have Liverpool at the weekend. So, I mean, what if you're Emery, Jacob, you kind of touched on the lineup. What do they need to do to even try and disrupt Liverpool at this point?
Good question. I think they're going to have to utilize Ozil. I think he's someone who could give that Liverpool back six a real run for their money if he picks up in the right places. But, you know, when you play him, you do end up vulnerable on the counter. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword there. I think Torreira is going to have another strong game. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see him sort of stand on, you know, Wijnaldum or on, you know, Shaqiri, whoever's playing that midfield, really try and mark them out of the game and really cut out supply lines, because that's the only way you're going to be able to shield, I think, the back of Arsenal. But then, you know, looking at it from a Liverpool's perspective, again, in addition to Ozil, I think Aubameyang presents a lot of matchup issues, and so does Lacazette. I only hope that Emery withdraws Lacazette again, because I think that was a big mistake against Brighton.
Yeah, he's been making some substitutions that I think of Arsenal fans a little concerned. Shay, on the Manchester end, Gollum, a.k.a. Smeagles, has transformed your boy Pogba by literally simply just playing him, you know, 10 yards higher in the pitch. So is he brilliant, or is this just being logical and practical?
I think it's a combination of being logical and practical, but also the ability to play a different style than Mourinho, which in this circumstance is brilliant, right? Like, I don't think Mourinho's style necessarily was incorrect. I just think it didn't work with the caliber of players we have. Now, I don't know, you know, what I don't like hearing is when I watch all these, like, shows and pundits, and they just say, and Solskjaer hasn't played free. Like, what does that actually mean? I don't actually know. Like, when someone says he hasn't played free, they feel comfortable on the ball. Like, you know, what does
that
mean?
Free? What's free?
That's my
Meek
point.
Mill.
Is that I can't say that and actually explain to the listeners what that means. But what I do know is that allowing them to not have to sit back and constantly be in defense and have plays behind the ball and allowing him to go forward is allowing Pogba to do the things that he's good at, which is shoot from distance. And I mean, granted, we're playing two of the worst. We've won against two of the worst teams in the league. But from a goal scoring perspective, we scored now also 8 goals in the last 2 games, I believe, if that's right. Pogba scoring 2 and having 2 assists. Mm-hmm. So we're looking exciting, and we're doing it with the players scoring that should be scoring, like Martial scoring, Rashford scoring, Pogba scoring. You know, that's all possible. Even Matic getting a goal. Like, these are the things, these are the names that we need to see from the beginning of the season that we're now seeing, you know, on stat sheet.
Yeah, I mean, I take that all into consideration, Shay. I think that's some good points. What does that really mean? And the more I think about it, I think it's just go out there and just play. I don't really know how much coaching he's doing. I think he's probably doing minimal work because it seems like the players are just doing what they want to do, right? Pogba's just playing how he would want to play if he was scrimmaging. And maybe that's how you get the best out of him. Maybe not. I don't know. But he does have, you're right, a very favorable run of games. And he was quick to say after, in the post-match interview, that he sort of recognizes that what he's bringing to the club is that feel-good factor, how great it is to hear his name. You know, it's bringing a good atmosphere, and that, you know, he recognizes that they have some easier teams coming up. So again, we'll have to look to what happens on the 13th versus Tottenham at Tottenham. I think that's going to be the key fixture. You know, we'll see where Man United's at in comparison to a title challenger. But the things that I'm looking for from Solskjaer is, can he get Lukaku backfiring? Lukaku only has 2 goals since September. And what does he get out of Sanchez? He mentioned both those players coming back this weekend to play against Bournemouth. If those two players suddenly turn it around, then maybe I'll believe that there's some hope for Man U long term, or that somehow Mourinho ruined those guys. But you know, we'll see. Maybe these players just don't fit into a system and just can't work with the cast around him. That's going to be a good barometer for me to kind of really judge the squad and see whether or not this post-Mourinho frenzy is really something.
On that point, though, one thing I do think was really encouraging with the post-match interview, which I'm not going to go into my deeper thought here for fear of being crucified by you two, but Solskjaer was talking about Pogba, and he was, and obviously he complimented him for being a great player, but he was saying how, you know, Pogba understands it's a privilege to play for Manchester United, that he's a Manchester United kid, it's a privilege to play for a club. He understands what wearing that shirt means. And I just thought it was interesting because that's not actually something you hear from many managers who are in the top of the table slash, you know, title contenders, right? You don't really hear anything on that club pride atmosphere. And maybe it's because we see so much change and now we have Solskjaer who's back in the mix who actually played for that club. And, you know, I don't listen to a lot of post-match interviews, but I haven't heard Emery, Sarri, Klopp say things like that, of that nature about how it's so strong and they should feel so prideful for playing for the.
I just don't know if he almost has to say that because Pogba's such a center of attention. But like, are you at all concerned, Shay, that if the performances are so drastically linked to Mourinho leaving, that aren't you concerned that that just might show that the players just decided they didn't want to play? Like, isn't that an indictment on like their character, the types of players they are?
Yeah, that's like
that they might
Roy
just turn
Keane's
it on and off
nightmare.
Again in the future. I mean, I hate to side with Roy Keane, but you know he's not always wrong. Like, you give 100% kind of regardless; it's your job.
Well, I'm not saying that's incorrect. I mean, we see time and time again, managers leave and team automatically starts playing better. What happened with Crystal Palace with Partey when he took over a couple of years ago? I don't think it's incorrect to say the players gave up. I just think it's he's putting the twist that he's putting on it. In the sense of it not being they were stifled, but rather these guys should be proud to play for the club they're playing for. Kind of like a club fight. It's just a different voice, a different attitude that we're used to hearing from new managers.
All right, guys, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, let's just make some quick bold picks before the year ends. And then maybe talk about our favorite goals from the holiday season. All right, guys, we're back. Did you guys see that Andros Townsend met up with the kid who got his jersey after that goal and signed it for him? So good for him. He's a good guy.
I mean, he's a great guy. I mean, there's nothing that we can't say positive about that man who scores great goals. He's great for the fans, great for the club, great for hair products all around the world. Like, overall, great guy.
He's great for this podcast.
Constant, you know, if we're talking about hair, can we spare a moment for Shay's new do? He's paying up on a bet he made with us.
Did
he
bleach his
well
hair?
On his way. No, he is well on his way to having twisties a la Wilfred Zaha. He has taken the initial steps. He's going to Miss B to get the twists. I got to be honest, it looks fantastic.
I still haven't seen him up close, so I can't wait. Can't wait, Shay. We got a lot of fixtures between now and the 3rd or 4th of January. So I guess quickly, what's one bold pick you can make over these next few days, wrapping up the holiday season? I think Fulham get another win. I mean, my gut is that they're going to beat Huddersfield, but if they don't beat Huddersfield, they're coming for you, Arsenal. So in the London Derby, they're going to get 3 points from one of these matches, either from the weekend or on New Year's Day, which takes them out of relegation. So
I think that Leicester are going to keep the good momentum going. They have Cardiff this Saturday, followed up with Everton. I think that that's right for them to actually overtake Man United in sixth. Now, I know there's a point disparity there of 4 points, but I think it's not a given that Man United will win these fixtures so heavy-handedly.
Dang.
And then I also, you know, this is a bolder prediction for, you know, as we look to next year, But I believe that if Solskjaer can take Man United to fifth, if he can even keep them in sixth and get a very high point tally, maybe win a cup, I think we'll be there at the start of next season and could win this job long term. Now, I know there's some back end issues with the club in Norway that he's in charge of currently, but nothing can be overcome. It can't be overcome with a fistful of dollars from the Glazers.
I like the Leicester pick. I think they're, or Leicester comment, Jacob. I think they're flying pretty high right now and they look good. What my bold predict, it's not really that bold, but I think Hazard looks pretty good in this false nine role. And I honestly, I mean, I'm not going to say Giroud and Morata never start another game because it depends on the matchup, but I see him playing this false nine role throughout the rest of the season. And I mean, granted, he got his 101 goals, so maybe it's a little overhyped right now, but I see Hazard being the new striker for Chelsea and Pedro playing off of him on the sides, but him starting that role consistently.
Damn, just pitching the center forwards out.
Well, if Pulisic is, you know, to be linked to Chelsea and that happens, you know, there could be room for him to play on the wing there. I think Nabil Fekir has also been linked to Chelsea and a host of other clubs. And maybe that's a potential wing option replacement. But I think my favorite transfer rumor I've really seen so far, Chris, you'll love this one. And so will you, Miles, if you listen. Fabio Barini to Newcastle to reunite with Rafa Benitez. The original Bleach Boy.
The dagger in the mouth, Barini. I'd like to see him at Newcastle, to be honest. I'll tell you what, they threw up nothing against Liverpool. I mean, that was the most ridiculous, sad performance. They didn't even put Rondon in at the end. I mean, come on. Come on, Rafa. He just fell on the sword, man.
Yep, he fell on that thick eerie.
Okay, guys, last thing. I know we only had one Swagometer update last week, and that was Andros Townsend making his way up to borderline lime green. I couldn't do it, guys. I couldn't do it. You know, maybe he gets there. But we will be making updates after the next couple match weeks. Send us your recommendations. Jacob Shea, any people we should be watching closely that you think is going to make some key movement or that, you know, maybe should be considered?
Yeah, I think you should put Unai Emery on that list for now and then especially see what happens after this weekend. But did you guys see that he's facing a potential suspension after kicking the water bottle that hit a fan?
Where'd it hit the fan? In the head?
I'm not quite sure, but it hit a fan. So this man was pissed last week. And, you know, if it's not, you know, we don't want a part two this weekend that they don't do well against Liverpool.
So what are you saying? He should be at the bottom or the top? I mean, sounds like he's accurate.
I think as of right now, since it's not official, we put him in the yellowish range, you know, in the bright yellow. But, you know, and if they do well this weekend, we move him towards the green. But if they don't, then and he actually gets suspension, we put him all the way to the bottom.
Oh, damn. Okay.
Yeah, I want to name a couple players. I think, obviously, you got to put Fabian Delph way down in the red.
Yeah, that's a terrible tackle.
I think his second red of the season. So, you know, not good.
He's a dirty player. He's an annoying player, actually, to watch, too.
I would say he's part of my all-bald team, if I'm coming up with a Premier League all-bald squad. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I thought about some more about Stephen Ireland, actually, the other day. I digress.
Another Man City guy, yeah.
Yeah,
two Man City men. It's just all bald, sure. Man City guys.
Zabaleta. But Fernandinho. Look, how can we, again, I already mentioned Song Heung-min, guys on the glow up, can't be stopped. I
mean, he's already in Forest Green, so you can't really go further.
Fine. Another player I'd like to call to action.
Well, he's going to add everybody to the list?
I mean, hey, I keep a long list. What can I say? I'm that one-pick wonder, Shay. What do you want me to say?
Hey.
I want to add Yannick Vestergaard, center back for Southampton.
Dude, he's been rock bottom. You putting him higher?
I'd love to put him higher. I mean, I think he is throwing his body on the line. Great locks. Again, great straight perm, beautiful blonde Danish hair. But I actually think he is 26. He's someone to look at. I mean, I would take him as a reserve center back on an up-and-coming team.
He's had two key errors against Southampton in recent weeks.
Man, I'm drawn to him every time I watch him play.
Over Lascelles? I know Lascelles had a bad game against Liverpool, but
Lascelles isn't even starting. He's not even starting. Now, that's a different issue. But fine. Put it there. Put a pin in it. But how can we overlook the man who scored the double today for West Ham?
Felipe Anderson. Damn.
Felipe Anderson. He is possibly not going to be there next year.
I know we've talked about it before. Is he the best player outside of the top six? I know Shea has mentioned Wilfred Zaha in that category. I've been a big fan of Roberto Pereira. Where does he rank amongst, you know, some of the most skilled players outside of the top six?
Yeah, I think he's certainly up there. He's a top European talent. I think you could also throw Jean Moutinho in there. And maybe that's it. I really have to sort of think hard about it.
Lamina, maybe?
Lamina's good. I think there's some action out there. We definitely should start, though, guys, considering and looking at who's in the bottom three or four teams, what players are not going to be there next season that perhaps could move in the transfer window if things are looking really bad. Because I think there could be some players abandoning ship.
I wouldn't want to go down to the championship with Burnley or Huddersfield Town, that's for sure.
Well, I was going to say, Chris, I mean, now that Jacob put 10 people on that Swagamba list, I at least should add a couple more. I think Burnley should be on that list. And Sean Dyche, you guys laughed at me when I said at the beginning of the season he may be the first manager to get fired.
You're dead right. Yeah, you're right.
And I know he won't, but that team is awful. Burnley is, they've let in 8 goals in the last 3 games. They're trash. They're the new age Fulham. And I also think Jacob over here keep talking about Son, but you should put Kyle Walker Peters in that list.
You're right.
He was involved in 3 of the 5 goals past week.
He did have one really nice cross. You should check that one out. Oh, it was a great ball.
Yeah, I saw that too, and I wasn't fully sure if he was passing it to when he passed it, but hey. It doesn't matter.
Look, when you're right back streaking down the line, like, all you got to do is hit one with pace low and just hope it lands on someone's foot.
Sure, but some of those passes is like, if I pass the ball to Cristiano Ronaldo and he rips it from distance, I still get the assist. Like the one he passed to, what was it, Eriksen?
Yeah.
It was like, okay, you get an assist for that. But it wasn't like it was the most dangerous or cutting edge of pass. So
but
I would put him
shot,
on the low end of the swag meter. But certainly,
hey,
he's an interesting talent.
But Jacob, I think we also do have to alter the scale a little bit to cater to positions like a right back where really your responsibility on the field is pretty limited. You know, like,
yeah, Chris representing all the right backs in the world right there.
I mean, he's got it. I think if Kyle Walker-Peters, though, you know, if you really want to step it up in the Swagometer, then you got to do something off the field, you know?
Yeah, Chris sees a little bit of himself in Kyle Walker-Peters. Isn't that right?
The host and producer with no love.
Yeah, this man tried to tell us that his game resembles Fabinho. And then when I indignantly responded, I'm not so sure about that, he got peeved.
Well, no, I mean, I just am asking you who your alternative is. I don't even think that's a compliment to myself. I really just think that, like, that's the style of play I play.
I mean, my game resembles more of a Cristiano kind of style with Odinio.
When Shea does a step over, the world stands still.
All right, guys, make sure you catch those games over the weekend. Happy New Year. We got fixtures right after the New Year drops. 2019 is here. We'll get those Swagometer updates as well. You can find us on AcrossThePond.co, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play Music, and more. And we will catch you guys on the other side.